doing his thing for ESPN 710, 710sports.com. On Twitter, it's at the B. Gustafson. And we welcome back Brandon Gustafson. Brandon, it looks like it's been exactly a month since we last spoke. So how are we holding up during pandemic 2020?
Well, we got live baseball. That definitely helps. But no, we're doing all right, you know, making do how we can. So let's get after it. We got Mariners, Seahawks coming up. They're in full swing in camp, so got some things going on.
Yeah, something to look forward to. Who'd have thunk it? You know, it's funny because when I spoke with you last, I asked you about the Mariners at the end of games and who might close, and you said, I don't think it's going to be a big deal because they're probably not going to have a lot of opportunities for saves. But, you know, along those lines, safe to say, you who cover the team and the franchise itself, they were being reasonable with so many new faces rebuilding. This was more about moving forward in a right direction rather than thinking they're going to pull off some miracle and win this year.
Oh, totally. And last year, there were a lot of new faces that Mariner fans weren't really accustomed to seeing, and that's pretty similar this year, but the difference is a lot of these young guys at least have a chance of sticking around for a long time, whereas last year you had veterans who it was just very clear they were hoping could show any sort of glimpse that they'd be worthy of going to a contender in a trade at the deadline, guys like Jay Bruce and people like that. This year, you know, you're seeing young guys like Justin Dunn, Justice Sheffield, Kyle Lewis, J.P. Crawford, Shed Long, you know, taking their lumps at times, but also showing glimpses of them being key building blocks for the future.
You know, I saw a story online, then I saw it on Twitter, including your account. Taiwan Walker, a talented guy who's just had to put up with the misery of injuries the last couple years. And he's had, you know, some good moments this year, some rough outings. Talking about his value to a contender, maybe. What are you hearing about the possibility he might be dealt, which I would assume would be for prospects?
Yeah, something that was kind of thought of initially was he was a bounce-back guy in terms of injury. Like you said, he had Tommy John, missed basically all of 2018. I think he only pitched one inning last year. And he's definitely looked good at times. I think he's 2-2 so far, had one or two rough outings. But I think John Paul Morosi, who used to actually cover the team up here in Seattle, was the guy that first noted teams are kind of checking in, especially after that last outing against the Dodgers, where I think he threw seven innings or so. Two teams that, and this isn't me, you know, hearing anything specifically, but just looking at it from a logistical perspective, would be the Yankees and the Braves. Both are contenders, teams that are probably going to make the playoffs, that have had some share of injuries with their starting rotation. He's only on the one-year deal, and with only playing 60 games, he's going to cost teams a lot less money because they're only going to have him for 1 month if he was traded right at the deadline, and then plus whatever playoffs are left. He's probably their best trade chip overall, if I had to speculate, because the only other two guys that would maybe get them more in terms of guys that would actually logistically be traded would be like Marco Gonzalez and Kyle Seager, but I don't see either of those guys getting moved for a number of reasons.
Yeah, Walker would be the ultimate rental. Talking Mariners with Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle. You mentioned J.P. Crawford, who made some remarkable plays in that L.A. series. And, you know, while I'm not ready to quite anoint him Omar Vizquel class, but his hands, and like you tweeted earlier in the week, his decision-making and strong arm, only 25 years old. How sweet is it to watch him kind of do his work night in, night out?
Yeah, watching him play defense is really fun. And we saw it a little bit last year. I think he appeared in about 90 games or so. And he made that one remarkable play against the Tigers that the team has just dubbed the throw, where he's in shallow left field. His feet aren't even on the ground. And he threw an absolute bullet to first base from across the diamond. He's made some really, really good plays. It's a lot of fun to watch him, and his progression at the plate's been pretty good also. He isn't getting on base in terms of hits as much as he was initially. I think he's hitting around 230 now, and he was up around 280, 290. But since they put him in the leadoff spot, he's still getting on base. He's walking a lot, which is good to see, because the thought was always he had the stuff to play shortstop defensively at the big league level. It was a matter of whether the bat could play, because when he was up with the Phillies after being their top prospect for so long, he just wasn't making solid contact. So we're seeing some spurts here and there, but it's definitely fun at the very least to watch him in the field.
Oh, yeah, he could flash the leather. Obviously, we're going to see a lot of new faces, especially once it's obvious that they don't have a playoff chance. And last night, L.J. Newsome, a debut. I know they took him out of high school. He was a Maryland kid 5 years ago, made it through three different levels of the minors last year, and I guess he did have his welcome to the bigs kiddo moment when Bellinger homered. But what have you learned? What could you tell us about this guy?
Throws a lot of strikes, and early on last year especially, I think his strikeout to walk ratio was among the best in of any level in the minor leagues. He pounds the zone. The Mariners have something that they call their gas camp, which is, you know, kind of as it would sound, pitchers going, working out, throwing a ton, trying to build up velocity, and he's somebody who has really benefited from that. I think he was touching 93, 94 a few times last night, whereas, you know, when they first drafted him, that really wasn't the case. He's somebody that probably projects as a swing guy, long guy in the bullpen. If you have somebody that goes down, you could insert him into the starting rotation if you really needed to. But I thought that first inning was awesome. Weak ground ball to Kyle Seager, got a strikeout the next at bat, and then a weak fly out. Like you said, Bellinger took him pretty far to right field, but other than that, I thought he looked really sharp, and it's going to be interesting to see if they are going to keep him in the pen long term.
Yeah, and, you know, it's his debut when he went three innings. Let's wrap the Mariner portion on a high note. We were both talking pretty big about Kyle Lewis in center. He was a first-round pick 4 years ago, leads the league in hits, and he still whiffs a little bit, but I guess you have to be out of your mind not to be pleased with the progress he's made, and I guess including maybe a little more pop in the bat than you thought.
Yeah, he's real, real strong in that first game off of Verlander. I think everybody was a little surprised how far that ball went. But, yeah, and kind of like you noted, the whiffs, that's going to come with a guy who's big and strong like he is, and he does a pretty good job overall of covering the plate, but part of that comes with he lets the ball travel. We're seeing a lot of base hits to right field on off-speed pitches, and that's something that a lot of young power hitters don't really do, so that's a really good sign. But he's walking a bit more, and I'm looking at his numbers right now. He was striking out a lot early on, but he's got 14 walks to 27 strikeouts, and honestly, that's less strikeouts than I would have thought that he'd have at this point, especially last year. I think even as good as he was hitting the six home runs, and he had home runs in his first three games, I think he struck out at like a 35% clip. I don't know what the exact percentage is right now, but it doesn't seem to be that high, so that's good news going forward. And then him playing center field, he's made some awesome plays. He robbed that double or home run, whatever it was, off of Justin Turner down in L.A., and that's just sweet to see.
To the Seahawks we go. I get the tendency would be to make a connection to previous greatness, and everybody knows what the Legion of Boom meant to that franchise. This group, now that Dunbar is back, obviously had Jamal Adams. They've got some depth, a couple of Pac-12ers, Ugo Amadi, Utah's Marquise Blair. What's the buzz about what this secondary might grow into?
Yeah, you got a lot of very hungry and energetic guys, and when you're talking about them, obviously, would start with Jamal Adams. The guy was first-team Pro Bowler, first-team All-Pro last year, and with the Seahawks, they gave up a ton to get him, a starting caliber safety, and Bradley McDougal, two first-round picks, a third-round pick, but he does a little bit of everything, and when you look at his stat sheet, you can kind of see that. He had 6.5 sacks, so he can rush the passer. He gets after running backs in the run game. Had an interception, return for a touchdown, had a fumble recovery for a touchdown. I'm not sure exactly how they want to use him, because typically they're kind of a team that's like, okay, we're going to have our free safety play up high. We'll have our strong safety, which is going to be Adams, play down closer to the box near the linebackers. But he can do so much for you that it's going to be fun to see where they want to line him up in different spots. You mentioned Ugo Amadi and Marquise Blair. Amadi was kind of the guy they thought was going to be the go-to nickel cornerback last year. He played a little bit week one. They didn't really like what they saw. He didn't see much time there until the end of the season. Blair saw some starts safety until Quandre Diggs, who they traded for, came in. And now those two, Blair and Amadi, are fighting it out for that nickel spot with the safety tandem set with Diggs and Adams. And then you go to the cornerbacks. Who knows how far along Dunbar is right now? It's kind of unclear. He could still be punished by the NFL just for being associated with that alleged armed robbery down in Florida. But if he does start a tandem of him and Shaquille Griffin, who made the Pro Bowl last year, I mean, it's far and away the best secondary they've had since the Legion of Boom days.
A couple final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle. Last year, a big issue was crash in the pocket. We know they didn't re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. They plucked the Raiders. Benson Maiola, Rasheem Green improved. What's the word about this pass rush? Because we talked about how excited they could be on the back end. You still have Wagner and Wright as the linebackers. I mean, what about the potential of the guys up front?
Yeah, Benson Maiola is somebody who's been getting a lot of rave reviews from coaches and players on both sides of the ball. And he had 7 sacks for the Raiders last year, and I think he only played like 28% of their snaps. So they're really excited about him, and they should be. When he was talking to the media the other day, he was talking about the potential of the pass rush, and he said it takes a village. And when the Seahawks were at their best back in 2013 when they won the Super Bowl, they had a pass rush by committee. I mean, Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett, I don't even think were technically starters, and they were guys that were getting close to double-digit sacks. So you have Maiola, you bring back Bruce Irvin, who's going to play some strong side linebacker, then rush the passer and obvious passing downs. Rasheem Green had 4 sacks. They're still holding out hope that LJ Collier, who was a disappointing first-round pick as a rookie last year, they're hoping that he can do that kind of Michael Bennett thing of playing the 5 technique, defensive end, slide inside as a defensive tackle on obvious passing downs. I would be shocked if they got 28 sacks or less. That just seems to be kind of crazy. I think there's more able bodies than there were last year because you were lining up guys like Ziggy Ansah, who just could not take any attention away from Jadeveon Clowney, and he's taking on 2 or 3 guys by himself. Having Jaron Reed for all of camp at defensive tackle, he was suspended the first 6 games last year. He had 10.5 sacks in 2018. So they're obviously banking high that he can have some sort of form like that again. The defense, it all starts with the back end for them, and Pete kind of built his defense like that back in the early 2000s. But I would expect the pass rush to be better this year than it was last year.
And lastly, I want to talk about the addition of Greg Olsen, primarily because he went to the same high school as me in North Jersey, Wayne Hills High. He's probably a little bit better of a player and a little more well-known. But, he had a couple of injury-prone seasons. You know, had more than 50 catches last year. We know he's 35, what he brings to the table. But overall, it looks like that tight end position, which Russell Wilson loves to use, could be a really strong element of this team, no?
Yeah, totally. And it's far and away the best tight end group that Pete and Russell have had since they've been working together. Greg is obviously a known commodity with what he brings in the passing game. And you, like you said, he had the 2 injury-plagued seasons in 2017 and 18, but he was more healthy last year, and he had some bad quarterback play with Cam Newton out basically the entire season. Jacob Hollister was a really nice surprise. He was a practice squad guy at the beginning of the year and basically ended the season as their number 3 receiver. Will Disley looks like a top 10 tight end when he's healthy. The issue for him is he tore his patella his rookie year in 2018, only played 4 games, only played 6 games last year before he tore his Achilles. So if those 3 specifically can all stay healthy, they're going to have some interesting packages, especially with 2 tight ends. And I think overall it's just the best group of pass catchers that Russell's had since he was drafted in 2012, because you have those 3 guys. You drafted 2 more tight ends, and Stephen Sullivan and Colby Parkinson. Luke Wilson's back at tight end. Then Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, everybody knows what they did. And Philip Dorsett, the free agent receiver they got from New England, Pete said it the other day, that's the fastest guy that they've ever had here. They think he's running in the 4.2s, and if he can blow the top off of the back of defenses, you know, Russell throws the best deep ball in the NFL, and that's just going to make things easier for the other receivers as well in terms of getting open.
So hopefully everybody behaves themselves and we actually have an NFL season. folks, he's Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle, online 710sports.com. On Twitter, it's at TheBGustafson. Always great stuff, sir. I always appreciate your time and insight. Be well, and obviously if things keep moving forward, look forward to chatting again down the road. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, have a good one.